This is Howard Husick, Vice President for Policy Research at the Manhattan Institute, with another in our series of conversations entitled From the Desk of the Dean, featuring Herb London, Senior Fellow at the Institute's Center for the American University, a contributor to our website, mindingthecampus.com, and the former dean of the Gallatin College for Individual Study at New York University. Our subject today is an important new Supreme Court case, a case going before the United States Supreme Court, called Fisher versus Texas, which involves the race-conscious admissions decisions at the University of Texas and the question of whether they should, in effect, be allowed to continue. Herb, let me start by asking you this. In 1978, the Bakke decision was handed down involving a medical school decision and race. 2003, Grutter versus Bollinger, really the same case whether minority enrollment could take race into account in order to gain minority enrollment. And now we're back with Fisher versus Texas. There's a different kind of approach being taken by the University of Texas than quotas. It's somewhat complicated. We'll get to that. But my first question is, why does this issue keep coming back to the Supreme Court?
It keeps coming back to the Supreme Court in certiorari in this case because I think the country has not been able to resolve this question. Ms. Fisher, Abby Fisher, is a young lady who applied to the University of Texas. Had she not been Caucasian, she would have been admitted because she met the standard of almost every minority student at the University of Texas. So the argument is she somehow being discriminated against by the decisions that are being made in regard to diversity? And the diversity standard, as ambiguous as it may seem, is largely a racial standard in the university. Keep in mind, in the Grutter case, the argument was made that race could be entertained as one of the factors in considering admission to the university, but it was not the first or overarching consideration. There should be other factors that go into it as well. They were merely saying race could be one of the factors. Now the question is, should race be permitted at all as one of the factors that's being considered when you're making admissions decisions?
Well, let me put the question another way. Why don't universities accede to the idea? We've had statewide policy decisions in Michigan and California, really important university system, California, Michigan too, to take race out of the equation. Why do different iterations of race-conscious admission policies continue to surface?
They surface in large part because there's the fear that what would happen is that there would be relatively few African-American members attending universities. There would be relatively few Hispanic members of the university. That the constellation of forces within the university would change, and that it would be largely an Asian and white population. And so there's very much a concern that what we have to do is introduce this kind of diversity. But it seems to me there are lots of ways of introducing diversity. Diversity could be introduced through geography. Diversity could be introduced through ideas. Diversity could be introduced through class. You don't have to introduce diversity through race. And keep in mind, when we think about the 1960s, what we were saying during that 1960s period in a variety of legislative matters is that race should be neither a handicap nor an advantage. I happen to believe in that position. I don't think that race should be seen as either an advantage or a handicap. We should have a race-neutral admissions policy across the board.
In keeping with our theme here from the desk of the dean, how do administrative officers at universities experience this race issue, do you think?
Well, the pressure is enormous, and it occurs with both professorial appointments as well as the admission standards to the university. And what people are looking at is how many people across the racial spectrum are we getting in each group? And it's very much a concern. At one point in the university's history, NYU's history, there was a disproportionate number of Asian students. And there was the argument that was made by some people in the Dean's Council that maybe we ought to establish a limit on the number of Asian students in the business school.
That was a literal argument that you heard.
That was absurd, absolutely absurd.
You heard that argument.
I've heard that argument, yes. And what I'm suggesting to you is that this kind of thing, I think, plays no role or should play no role in university admissions. Whether it's 99% Asian students, 5% Asian students, 10% black students, 50% Jewish students, should have no bearing at all on the admission standard. It should be a race-neutral decision.
Right. Now, in Texas, they did try to do something, they being the University of Texas system, similar to something you suggested a moment ago, looking at this geographically within the state of Texas. That is, the top 10% of any high school class, and we know that there are poor and rich high schools, there are white and black high schools, that top 10% would qualify for the most prestigious of the universities in this Texas system, the University of Texas. Does that meet the standard you think is appropriate?
I think that would have been a very appropriate standard. And in fact, it's a standard that has been applied, but insufficient to deal with the Abby Fisher case. Because as I indicated before, if you were to use the objective criteria that are applied for admission to the University of Texas, had she been a minority student, she would unquestionably have gained admission. But she was denied admission in large part because she's Caucasian.
Because she wasn't part of that 10%.
That's correct. She wasn't part of that 10%, and she happens to be Caucasian.
So if they had just stuck to the 10%, you'd be okay with that?
I would be okay with that because I think that would lead to a kind of diversity, a diversity of a kind. As I said, there's diversity itself has become a kind of treacly, over-sentimentalized term. And I'm not entirely happy with the way in which it's applied. But since it's applied based on race, I think that's what has to change. And based on the composition of the court, the Supreme Court, I think that's likely to occur. Sandra Day O'Connor is no longer there. We now have Alito. Alito, I think, will see the matter in a very, very different way. So I do think that we're going to move towards a kind of race-neutral attitude on the part of the court.
And so you expect the court to rule against the University of Texas?
That is correct. I do believe that, even though lower courts have already decided against Abby Fisher.
Right. And do you think that would then lead to an acceptance of the idea of race neutrality in American university life?
Well, again, that's very hard to say, and that's an interesting question. It seems to me that what has happened in Michigan and California may very well be the beginning of a significant change, a sea change in university attitudes. I think we've reached a point with an African-American who's president of the United States. People have come to the conclusion that these kind of affirmative action programs do not work. And it's far more important for a student to find a certain comfort level in the university than to necessarily find admission into the University of California at Berkeley. That's not important. What is important is that the student derive the most significant experience he can from his 4 years in college.
Well, this is going to be a really important decision, Fisher versus Texas. This has been another in our series of conversations entitled From the Desk of the Dean, featuring Herb London, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute Center for the American University and the former dean of the Gallatin College for Individual Study at New York University. For the Manhattan Institute, I'm Vice President for Policy Research, Howard Husick.